Accession number 19067, Reel 7.
Fred McLeod, Reel 7.
Yeah, Pete says, I can't bloody believe it. He said, you risk your life, he said, for other people, he said, and they turn round and they bloody walk away. And as true as I'm looking at you, well, the carried Cooper away. And they helped, I can't remember what they call his Christian name, Blamire, but Captain Blamire. And as far as I know, they went down to Imphal, because they were still holding Imphal was the British. We stayed there, and till it had been all that day, going through that with Bob Little, getting him down, being active all night through that action. And I was laid there, and all of a sudden, Pete said to me, what are we going to do? So I said, well, I said, you had the order. We've got to stop here. And we did do. I should say, I'd no watch, he'd no watch. But it was broad daylight. And we laid at the side of the road, and there was this... This tank came down the road, and I don't know who it belonged, but it was a British tank, and there was another tank behind it, and we both stood up, we both put our hands up like that to show that it was unarmed, and this tank commander says, "What are you doing?" So, of course, I tell them. So I says, do you want to ride back to Imphal? So I'll always remember what Pete says. Pete says, have you got any fags? I can remember it as now, have you got any fags? So I said, get in, and they give us a cig. They give us a drink of tea as well out of a flask. And we went right down into Imphal. And... Well, be in the afternoon, the interrogated us, wanted to know who I was, because I think I had about 3 weeks growth of whiskers on my face, and Pete looked like a bloody nigger. A lot of them were looking at him, and he said to me, he says, are you hungry? So I said, not really. So he says, come on. He said, let's go and see if we can get some toys. And with that, I can just remember, all I can remember was sitting down and starting to cry.
Was that a reaction from what happened?
Yeah. Well, I think it was more with... When you risk your own life and you bring somebody out and they die, like Sam McGlone said to me, he said, Bob Little's dead, Mac. I just said, oh, Christ. There's somebody knocked your bloody wickets down. And that was that. We reformed, and I read they were reformed, and we got cleaned up this afternoon, and we thought it was coming out. And they said, you've one last duffy. They always called them duffies.
What was that?
There's all this what they call duffies, was these attacks and this, that and the other. Never said we're going in the attack. with a Duffy coming up. And which I go back down them foul road, this what they call them, this OP Hill, where Cooper had copped it, they said it was of no strategic value. So they decided they'd leave it. Because it was, I mean, anybody on top of there with artillery, it had you'd no chance. You'd have to get out the road. So they left it. And they said, your last Duffy, that there was a hill feature right opposite Infall airstrip, and I was frightened that if he come in any sort of strength, that would be his last, was to get the airstrip. And because all advanced units, so there was what they call them, supplied by the air. And there was Blenheim fighters, and they'd been
redesigned.
There was bow fighters, the twin engine, and at the side, they'd made these sliding doors. And the doors was maybe about 8 foot. And there was maybe three or four inside the aircraft when they came over. And they were pushing the maybe flour, mule stuff, ammunition, medical supplies, water, everything you needed to keep it going, supplying. And they was frightened if they lost that airstrip, they be like losing the joker of the pack, anyhow. So they said, your last Duffy, I'll always remember it was straight across the road from Infall, and it went up to about 5,000 or 6,000 foot. And the Japanese out there were down the road, they'd come back in, and they was in this pots and bam. Because this, if you ever get a chance of speaking to Ian Wilson, do you know which Ian Wilson I mean? Sam Wilson's lad. He took over this tea car business. He wrote an article, and I'll fish it out for you, same as that other one, that tea car with Jimmy Golding through Cloud and Sunshine.
You're talking about Pots and Bam?
Yes, the Japs was in Pots and Bam. And there was on top of this lion's, they called it Lion's Head, and it just looked like a lion, like that, as though the front of it was like the lion's head, like that, and the back. That was the hill feature as it went down like that. And he was in there, on top of there, in bloody numbers. And they were speechless. The chaps had gone 15 bloody months. Constant action, constant hardships. Wondering where the next bloody supply of grub was coming from. And they said, this is your last Duffy. Once you get through that. Now, this is quite true. It quite true. They says, straight onto the road, across the paddy fields, cut through the Japs lands, turn right and up the hill. Bah, dear God, we never got over the start line. There were two Japanese machine guns at each end of Pots and Bam. And they're knocking hell's bloody bells out of us. And I went down on the floor, and where Pete had got to, I don't know. But there was another lad, his name will come to me, he played rugby for Widnes. And He was a lovely lad as well, great. You couldn't insult him, you know, you said to him, you mucky stinking getter, all like that, you know, sweating and whatnot. You couldn't insult him. He had all his really lovely white teeth, all his laughing. And we went down without this paddy bun. It was like a small bank where they grow the rice in. So I said to me, he says, I'm not bloody going any further. So I said, well, I said, if you're not, I said, I'm not going on my own. So we laid there like that, I turned over on my back, and he did, and we lit a fag, and there's this officer comes up. And he says, what the hell do you think you two are doing? So I just looked and I said, where? I said, we're knackered, just like that. So he says, do you know, he said, we've lost 27% casualties. Now, this is as true as I'm saying to you. We've lost 27% casualties, he said, and we're not going no bloody further.
Did he mean from the battalion?
From our company, no, our company. I think we were well under strength, but we went we went down that road, across the paddy field, and that was when the two bloody machine guns hit us. And he said, stay where you are. He said, I'll come back and see you in a minute. He said, stay where you are. So he come back in about half an hour or so. And he came back and he had two packets of biscuits and a tin of bully beef. He said, here, he said, stay where you are, get that into you. He said, and there's also a hot water bottle of tea, get that into you. He said, under no consideration do you move from here. They've called for an American airstrike. And there was Fulty Vengeance dive bombers. And they came in in three waves, and they started dive bombing, and it was just bloody murder. We was at one side of the road, and the Japs in this Potsdam Bam, and this Potsdam Bam, it was like an L-shaped wood, and the road run through it. You could hear him screaming, you could hear him yelling, and you could hear him running on the road. And it'll come to me, call this chap, and he said to me, he said, you've been told, ain't you? You don't move. And we didn't move. When the airstrike lifted, there was this officer came along, come back again, and he said, right. He says, now, he said, you can go across the road. He said, but by no means do you go in that wood. He said, stop in the middle of the field, if you like, and dig in. And they called him Mac something, his name's on, but Les McGrath, that's what they called him, Les McGrath. And he played for Widnes and rugby league team before the war. And we was digging in, and we were about 25 yards off this edge row. And he came again, did this officer, he knew we was there, and he brought us some more biscuits and a drink of tea. He said, don't move. He said, between you and me, he says, and I hope he does it, he said, they expect that it's going to break out during the hours of darkness, which it did at about 3 o'clock in the morning. We was only dug in about, it was like digging into granite. It was like lumps of black coal. And there was a banyan tree. We laid along the top like that, and we laid flat out, and we were looking at towards this wood, and we're scuffing these biscuits till it got there. and he said to me, he said, well, I said, I'm knackered. So I said to him, well, go on. I said, you have a nose kip. I said, and I'll have a nose kip. One on, one off, just like that. So I said, right. And we carried on like that. And it must have been about 3 o'clock in the morning when all that let loose. There was Tracer, white Tracer, green Tracer, red Tracer. And it was breaking out. He broke out and he went straight up the road. And as he went up the road, these two bloody tanks met him. That said, "Give us a ride down." They'd gone back to where they was. And we stayed there all the next day, and the next day...
What happened when they ran into the tanks?
I don't know what happened. We never saw them no more, the Japs. So whether they just buggered off back where they'd gone, where they'd been, I don't know. But they cleared off. And we went back to Imphal.
How many companies had been in that last stuffy? Not just yours.
No, there was a Gurkhas. But the second fifth Royal Gurkhas and the second seventh, and there was us. We was 48th Brigade, because we came out together. And we stayed there. Like I say, I must have had a month's growth. And it was bloody horrible. When you face it, you're sweating and you're bloody peeing, you can't get to it. And everybody was the same. Everybody was the same. Necks have been bloody lousy, raggy, unshaven, unwashed, unclean. And we set off and we went back the same way as what we'd come 15 months before. And we couldn't believe it. Looked at each other and we said, was it bloody worthwhile? We went back. I'll always remember there was Vera Lynn and she's singing We'll Meet Again. And she's about 12 miles down the road at Dimmapur. And she's entertaining the troops, the Americans, in Dimmapur. We went down the road, and there was Dimmapur on the left, Chittagong straight down the road, and there was Ramree Island, like I said to you before, was going back the way that we came, straight down the Manipur River. And when we got opposite Ramree Island, our CO says, it's our duty, he said, to see that it's clear. And one of the other officers says, well, if you feel that way about it, why don't you bloody go across and see it? And it's the honest truth, that's what he said. And he did. There was these, like, kayaks or canoes or whatever it was, and they went across. And they had a look around and they come back, and they said, it's all right. Report it all clear.
What was clear?
This Ramree Island in the middle of the Manipur, it opens out like a lake. And we're marching down the road, we're starting to cheer up and be a bit chirpy and this, that and the other. And then we turned into this park, and there was marquees. And they started laughing, and they says, I wonder who's coming to dinner. So we goes in, Les McGrath, myself, chap in a white coat, your razor. He said, the left hand side of the blade's yours, and the right hand side's yours. Away you go. So we're going through a delousing centre. No, this is the honest truth. We went through like bloody ragamuffins. Washed. arms up, turn round. Anybody lice, any crabs are out like that. How do you feel? Oh, not bad. That's right. Go further down. Let's see your hands. Turn round. Look up your backside. No, it's true. Take your boots off. Sit down. Now I'm looking and it goes like that.
Nudged him.
No, it nudges me, and he said, what can you say? And I started laughing. And we all wore white hob socks. And you put your white hob socks on like that.
Hob socks?
Hob socks, white wool hob socks, yes. And your gaiters, put it up on the top, down like that. And your trousers in, and up there like that. Now then, from there, to there, was absolutely jet black.
At the bottom of your trousers?
Yes, and the top part of your sock was snow white. And I'm sat looking at him, and I started laughing, and he looked at me and he started laughing. He said, you wouldn't think, he said, you've heard of that song, these books are made for walking. He said, them bloody socks look as though they could walk straight out. And we went through the delousing centre, Bath. There was about six barbers, and they didn't mess about neither. Like our arbour gets his cut, which was right over the top. Just look, bowl as a badger, and cut your hair off, shave, shower. Rifles that we'd had, 15 months, bang. Throw them into heaps, quite true. Ammunition, grenades, chucked all that lot. Went through, down the line, burn it for you, rifle for you, burn it for you, rifle for you. And went right through the lines. Brand new uniforms, Canadian green. I forget what they call not said, some sort of new bush hats, new uniforms, new gaiters, new boots, new everything. And as I went through, this chap looked up, said, hey, who's that over there? And they kept turning around and saying, who's that over there? And honestly, we went through like rag men. And we come out like bloody princes. You couldn't believe it.
Excuse the rude question, but why did they want to look up your behind?
Well, it'd be for what they call it, called Sandy McNabs, didn't they? Crabs, body lice, you know. And I was on a reading in News of the World on Sunday. Somebody said she'd slept with somebody. And she thought she'd caught crabs. Did you read it?
No.
It's in the News of the World. And it appears that there's only one cure for them. And it's some sort of blue ointment that they, what they call them, massage into the skin. And it has to be left on for about 48 hours, then washed off. And you're supposed to be free. Free of them. Some sort of body lice they are. But they say that the crabs, because they have like claws on them, and they grip into the skin, and that's the only way. You've got to kill them first with this blue ointment stuff, and then wash it off. And I tell you, when we come out there, I'll always remember falling, three in land. Slope arms, and just as others like guards on parade. You wouldn't have thought what the trivials that they'd been through and this, that and the other. And all of a sudden, somebody in the middle started singing, Dear Ken John Peel. Because where's the Border Regiment? And,
is that the Border Regiment song?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dear Ken John Peel. Peel for you, hello. Yeah, that was a regimental tune. And, we came, We came right out and we came back to where we'd started. That's where I say we came back to Shillong, we came back to Happy Valley, and from there we went to Ranchi. And from Ranchi, everybody had to have 24 days leave. But they said, unfortunately, we haven't got the money to go with it. So they said, well, bugger it, we're not going on leave then. We're not going skins. So they compromised, and they gave us all 14 days leave. And two-thirds of the pay. Because, I mean, we had an interview with our PRI, and that's the
public of the Regimental Institute.
Yes, yes. He met us in this room, and he said, it's unfortunate. He said, don't blame us. He says, blame the conditions. He says, you're going to get two-thirds of your pay. Well, I was on 15 rupees, I think it was 15 rupees. And there was 12 rupees, so many annas to an English pound. So when I went on leave with about 70 quid. Well, I don't think I'd seen 70 quid in all the 5 years I was in the army. And they put five different places where you could go on leave. You could go to, there was this big lake, they were talking about it, Kashmir. You could go to Kashmir, and that was full of book for a start, because that book, I think, that I showed you, there's one of my mates on there.
Griffiths,
though. Yeah, that dirty, like a houseboat, on the lake at Kashmir. So they said to me, "Where do you want to go?" So I said, "Anywhere where there's a brewery. No use having all this money and you can't get a drink." So they said, "You can either go to a place called Balloon." I said, "What bloody hell is that?" Well, he said, it's an officer's rest centre. He said, at Dalhousie. And he says, you've heard of Amritsar, haven't you? So I said, yes. So I said, have you seen the Golden Temple at Amritsar? So I said, no. So I said, well, if you go there, you will see it. So, there was Upper Dalhousie and Lower Dalhousie, and the Upper Dalhousie was for officers and the Lower Dalhousie was for other ranks. And I went there for 14 days, and I must say, it was marvellous, wonderful. Non-malaria, day or night, you could walk about, shirt sleeve order, it was... Choppers, like them sandals, lovely. There was a bar, and the only difficulty you had in they never supplied glasses. Never supplied glasses with these bottles of beer, and there was these three gill bottles.